This is Marketplace After the Bell. I'm Scott Jagow, and I'm here to make sense of what happened this week in business and the economy. It's Thursday, July 2nd. Can you believe the year is half over already? A few state legislatures obviously didn't check their calendars. Yesterday was the start of their fiscal year, and they didn't pass a budget. It's a painful time for state government. Tax revenues are way down because so many people have lost their jobs, and governors and lawmakers somehow have to agree on where to cut. And you know how that goes. The worst case is probably California, which does have a budget. It's just about $25 billion in the hole. California this week declared a fiscal state of emergency, and the next step is handing out IOUs to people, you know, like in Monopoly. This week also marked the end of the second quarter for many companies. It was an excellent quarter for Wall Street, but there's an uneasiness lurking beneath the surface. How sturdy is the foundation? Are there other shoes that are about to drop? The toxic assets on bank books. They haven't been erased. They're still there, hiding. The latest unemployment numbers came out. The unemployment rate ticked up just a tenth to 9.5%, so that could be encouraging. But the length of time that people are out of work is not. 4.4 million Americans haven't had a job in at least 7 months. That's more than half a year and counting. So you are.
Marketplace, providing you what you need to know about business and economics on air and online. Explore everything Marketplace has to offer, from explainers on technical terms to stories on personal finance at marketplace.org.
Ohio, Illinois, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Connecticut, several states started the fiscal year without a budget in place. That happens sometimes. Well, except in Indiana, which hasn't missed a budget deadline since the Civil War. But even Indiana struggled to pass a budget on time this year. Lawmakers have to make some tough choices that affect a lot of people's lives, people who have already suffered because of the recession. Nowhere is the budget strife deeper than in California. The state is, without exaggeration, on the edge of bankruptcy. It will be handing out IOUs instead of money. Tess Viglin talked to Evan Halper of the Los Angeles Times about how the state got into this mess.
Well, tax revenues have dropped off precipitously, and California is a state that is overly reliant on income taxes. As soon as things drop off, as they have over the last several months, the state certainly winds up in a budget crisis, as it continually has over the last many years.
So what does that look like? Do we have any notion of what a bankrupt state looks like? Who might feel that the most?
You know, the experts will tell you the state can't go bankrupt legally, but in sort of practice, that's kind of where we're heading.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been there in 1992 and before that, back in the Great Depression. And, you know, what it looks like is the mess. I mean, you know, if you're a vendor trying to do business with the state and you're just getting these IOUs, you're not getting paid, and then people wind up having to lay off staff. I mean, we talked to people when this almost happened last time around who, for example, have contracts with the state to bring low-income dialysis patients to their appointments, and they were having to shut down their businesses because they were going check to check and they couldn't pay their employees.
Do you think that average Californians really have any notion of how bad this is and could get? I mean, you look at, for example, the local television news. I think it was maybe the fourth or fifth story last night.
I think the Californians have been told the sky is falling so many times since, right before the recall, that they've grown numb to it. And it just looks to them like sort of more yelling in Sacramento, and the sky has not fallen yet.
Hmm.
So they tune it out.
But believe me, not everyone is tuning it out. As Evan said, a lot of businesses depend on the state. And if they get a piece of paper that says, we'll pay you in 3 months, well, that's an entire quarter. Here's Sarah Gardner.
John Riley says the state of California owes his company more than $450,000 for computer security services. The co-owner of Sacramento Technology Group is bracing for a big IOU instead of cash. Riley says if their bankers don't honor that IOU, his company may be forced to stop doing business with California, and that'll hurt. The state accounts for half his company's sales.
Right now, we're kind of holding our breath.
Riley says his company's already reduced its workforce from 20 to 13 employees because of the recession, and he doesn't want to cut any more jobs.
So we're just hoping that some of our private customers come through with some more projects.
As of this afternoon, only one lender had promised the state it would cash the IOUs. If banks refuse, thousands of the state's private vendors will be forced to beg for more credit. And in this economic climate, that can be tough. Mike Murphy runs a day program for developmentally disabled adults in Orange County. He's counting on the state vendor that contracts with him to get a line of credit to tide itself over.
If they cannot secure that, then we're probably going to have an extended summer vacation.
The only experience I have with IOUs is from Monopoly. I always seem to wind up using a lot of them. But in the real world, IOUs are a tradable currency. You can negotiate their value with a bank, for example. I wanted to find out more about how this works, so I called up Jacob Roper. He's with the California Comptroller's Office. I asked him what experience California has with IOUs.
Unfortunately, California has done this at least once before. It depends on whether or not you count 1982. In 92, the state controller then, a man named Gray Davis, who later on became governor, had to issue IOUs for several months during a budget standoff. They also were issued in 82 for a single day and then called the same day. But it's still not anything that California has faced in 17 years, and for good reason. It's not a way you want to go. Issuing IOU hurts thousands of people who receive them, and it costs taxpayers millions of dollars.
When these things are issued, they're going out to anyone that is owed money by the state?
No. The state law in this area is very clear. Things like education and debt service, that's people who hold general obligation bonds from the state, are protected in the state constitution. They will continue to receive regular cash payments. It's anyone who doesn't have those legal protections in law. That includes personal income tax refunds, local government money to provide social services. That includes many small businesses that provide services to the state. Unfortunately, it's going to hit a lot of people who do not have the means to cover their own cash flow for the month of July and are depending upon that money.
In terms of how exactly these things will work, can you explain the process that is going to happen here in the next few days?
Sure. No IOU will be issued until the Pooled Money Investment Board here in California sets a rate for them. The rate can be up to 5%, their interest-bearing notes, and their legally negotiable notes. So a bank could accept them if they chose to. You could cash it in at a bank. The bank would hold it. The bank would be the receiver and the recipient of the interest payment when that note matures on October 1. The current plan, again, is for these to mature in 90 days on the 1st of October.
So what you're saying is that perhaps somebody who got one of these notes but needed the money right now could go to the bank. The bank would take the note.
If the bank decided to take the note. We've only heard from one financial institution that they will be honoring these. That's the Golden One Credit Union that's based here in California. We still haven't heard from a number of other banks.
Hmm. Is this just an open market where these things would be traded? If
again, they're a legally negotiable instrument and could be traded or sold. Ultimately, the payment plus the interest goes to whoever holds the note on its maturity date.
And the two parties negotiate how much the person would get right now?
That would be a private matter between them.
Hmm. Well, it sounds pretty interesting.
And a place that we haven't gone for a long time, and like I said, for good reason.
Right.
The controller has been insistent. He has encouraged the legislature and the governor to come to an agreement that provides cash solutions here so we don't have to go this route. He's offered his full support, any help that his office can provide. Unfortunately, we still stand here with an out-of-balance budget that creates a cash problem.
All right, Jacob, thanks for explaining this to us.
Thanks a lot.
Jacob Roper with the California Comptroller's Office. Since I talked to Jacob, Bank of America has said it will honor California IOUs, at least through July 10th.
Yeah.
This is Marketplace After the Bell for July 2nd. I'm Scott Jagow. It seems we can't go a week without talking about the banks, and I'm afraid this week is no exception. But let's start on your end of the transaction, consumer protection. We learned more details about what kind of financial security the administration has in mind, and John Dimsdale reported on that.
The proposed Consumer Financial Protection Agency could issue subpoenas, hold hearings, and go after court orders to stop abusive banking practices. Assistant Treasury Secretary Michael Barr says the agency will be able to vigorously enforce consumer protections.
Our view has been you need to have regulation that establishes a level playing field for good competition, good innovation, financial innovation, on the basis of a baseline of respect and dignity that I think all consumers are owed.
Bankers, though, say the new regulator will end up hurting innovation. Scott Talbot with the Financial Services Roundtable says regulatory scrutiny will have a chilling effect on cheaper loans and credit terms.
So what you'll see is that companies will probably only offer plain vanilla products and will be reluctant to venture out into new territory and create new products for fear of overregulation or even a lawsuit for offering different types of products beyond the plain vanilla ones.
You know, I see it exactly the other way.
Harvard Law Professor Elizabeth Warren chairs Congress's Oversight Panel on Financial Regulations.
This is about getting rid of the tricks and the traps. If the only way you can really put your product out there is to fool people, to give them a bunch of incomprehensible language, you know, bury everything in the fine print, then it's not going to work.
Speaking of burying things, let's get back to the issue of toxic assets, those bundles of bad and potentially bad real estate loans. As you probably know, the government has a program designed to get those assets off bank books. It's called PPIP, as in Public-Private Investment Program. It's not off to a particularly good start. Our New York Bureau Chief Amy Scott explains why.
Here's how the public-private partnership was supposed to work. Money managers selected by the Treasury would raise cash from private investors. The government would match it and kick in cheap loans. Then the fund would buy troubled mortgage-backed securities from banks. Problem is, those banks don't want to sell. I asked Josh Rosner with advisory firm Graham Fisher why. He points at my wrist.
You've got a watch, and when you bought the watch, your watch was a $5,000 watch.
I wish, but anyway, let's say my watch is now worth half what I paid.
So if you were forced to sell it, you'd realize a $2,500 loss.
But if I just keep it on my wrist.
If you keep it on your wrist, then there's no loss to be had. So that's exactly the situation.
The banks are holding problem securities on their books, hoping they'll regain their value. Investors are willing to buy some of those assets, but only at a fraction of what the banks say they're worth. Sue Allen helps hedge funds and other investors value mortgage-backed securities. She says many were initially interested in the government's program, but they're starting to lose patience.
The people who funded these investment pools are saying, okay, well, if you can't find anything to buy, then we need to redeploy our money and put it elsewhere.
Then there's the question of whether the banks still need the program. Several banks have raised billions of dollars from investors in the last few months. That helps cushion losses from their toxic securities. It's kind of like me and my $5,000 timepiece. The more cash I have in the bank, the less likely I am to pawn that watch. But analyst Paul Miller with Friedman Billings Ramsey says banks still need a lot more capital, up to $1 trillion worth.
The bottom line is that we have not addressed the toxic assets on these balance sheets. And until we address them, we're going to still struggle in this environment and just jump from crisis to crisis.
The watch analogy is a good one because those assets could be a ticking time bomb. But believe it or not, banks are actually buying more of them. And that certainly requires an explanation. Let's bring in our senior editor and whiteboard host, Patty Hirsch. Patty, I don't understand. Separately, the banks are buying up assets from each other, but they're not participating in PPIP?
Well, not at this point, no. Some of them are saying to themselves, well, you know, if we buy this stuff really, really cheap, at say 50 or 40 cents on the dollar, and then the PPIP kicks in, as it accelerates and more people buy these mortgage-backed securities, the price is going to rise, and then we can sell back into the market again and maybe make 20 cents on the dollar or more.
I mean, it seems like they're trying to find a way around it again.
Yeah, it is. I mean, what they're trying to do is capitalize on the government's involvement. So they might not necessarily. I mean, one thing that could be really weird, okay, is if a bank is divided into several different business lines. One business line at a bank might buy ahead of the PPIP And then the other business line of the bank might buy into the PPIP, and then the other, that first business line sells back. So it kind of takes advantage of its own involvement in the program.
This is crazy. Okay.
It's genius.
Genius. Right. Now, in terms of later on, though, we still don't know the value of these assets. They're being valued at something. What is the danger down the road?
Well, in many cases, these assets are dead. They're not paying interest now, and they'll never pay interest ever again. I mean, these are things like these synthetic CDOs or these CDOs squared or even CDOs cubed. You know, these are mortgage-backed securities that have been sliced so many times they're just completely unrecognizable. And that stuff is just lethal. I mean, you're not touching that. I mean, I want to paint an analogy for you, okay? Mm-hmm. So think about a pot of gravy. You know, you've just poured the gravy off from your Thanksgiving turkey, and it's all brown and viscous. It's just like sort of a cloudy kind of pot of liquid. But we all know there's a lot of fat in that gravy, all right? So a lot of people will push that gravy aside, and they'll wait for the fat to settle out. So after a couple of hours, say, or sometimes even a couple of minutes if it's really lethal, you'll start to see the fat separate out. And you can take that fat and skim it off the top and throw it away. And that's what investors are doing with the mortgage-backed securities market now, and these asset-backed securities.
But how do they throw it away, though?
Well, they just leave it. Well, throw it away.
Yeah.
They leave it on the bank's balance sheets.
Right.
So Citibank and Bank of America that bought this stuff or arranged this stuff and actually had to keep it on their books, they're going to have to hold on to that, and that's it.
Yeah, it's still there.
Oh, yeah.
And that's really the point. It's still there, but they're choosing to get into other aspects of the mortgage-backed security market in order to perhaps balance out the bad parts? Is that what you're saying?
Well, much of this stuff has been written down. I don't know if it's been written down to zero, but I can tell you that the banks will have got this, the fat that they've skimmed off and sort of stuck on the side in a special purpose vehicle or in a locked box somewhere in the vault there. But so that stuff stays on the balance, but they may value that down to zero. Okay, they may have written that off already. But they're obviously trying to make money elsewhere, and somewhere else they can make money is, say, Citibank might say, you know what, we'll buy some of Bank of America's bad assets because we can buy it cheap and it's still paying an interest payment right now, because they're not going to buy anything that's not current, all right? So we're going to be paying interest. So we'll buy that, and we'll bet either that the PPIP comes back up and we'll be able to sell it back in, or maybe even it'll hold to maturity and we'll be able to get all of our money back on this.
I just have this feeling that not much has changed based on your description of what's going on.
Well, I don't think much has changed, no. I mean, I think that it's all about management of risk, you know, and these guys are looking at a situation and saying, how can we profit from this situation? And yes, they know that it's really risky. Go back to the gravy. That gravy is still loaded with fat. You may have taken the top layer of fat off, but it's still really bad for you if you take too much of it. So they're getting involved. They're looking at the securities market. They're saying, yes, there are risks here, but you know, maybe we can profit from the risk here. Maybe we can buy it because it's really, really cheap and it could go up 10, 20 points and then we can sell it back again. I mean, that's what these guys are about. They're about making money out of seriously risky situations.
All right. Patty Hirsch, our senior editor. Thanks.
Always a pleasure.
You know, the government can create programs. It can re-regulate. It can intervene. But in the end, Wall Street will still find a way to make money. That's what it does. And as disconcerting as the risk-taking might be after what we've just been through, taking risks is still the American way, whether it be entrepreneurship or investing. We just have to figure out how to encourage prudent risk-taking. It's like the difference between getting a good view of a fireworks display and standing over a rocket about to go off. And that's Marketplace After the Bell for this week. I'm Scott Jagow. I'll be back next Friday to make sense of what happened in business and the economy. Have a safe and enjoyable 4th of July. Oh, beautiful, far spacious skies, far amber waves of grain, far purple mountains. Majesties above the fruited plain. But now wait a minute, I'm talking about America, sweet America. You know, God done shed his grace on thee.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.